On today's show, we're going to talk about the bloodbath that is the Eastern Conference. Thanks for making Lockdown Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we're free and available wherever you get your podcasts.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
The music you heard on the way in is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs and the NBA at large for places like Diamond Up Rocks and SB Nation for the Sword. Evan Damrell's out today. Producer Jake Stevens is not with us today behind the virtual glass. But we do have a special guest, David Ramil, one of my favorite people, really, in basketball media from Lockdown Heat. David, what's up, brother? How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing a lot better now. Thanks for that intro. And you know, the only reason I'm here now is because Evan's not available. So that should tell you everything you need to know.
Nah, he won't. He may not listen to this, but Evan, if you do listen, oh. I've upgraded. Evan, I've upgraded to David. All right, so we're going to dive into the bloodbath that is Eastern Conference. David, I'm going to run through what our friends at BetOnline have as the over-unders, and I think we're just going to vibe our way through what this conference is going to be like. Obviously, some teams have made some aggressive moves this summer. The Cleveland Cavaliers got Donovan Mitchell. The Atlanta Hawks got DeJounte Murray. There are some other teams that, let's say the Brooklyn Nets, that did not have to get rid of players who maybe wanted out, and we'll see what they are. But here's the over-unders as of right now. Celtics are at number one, 55.5. The Bucks are at 53. The Nets are at 50.5. The 76ers also at 50.5. The team you cover are at 50. The Cavs are at 46.5. That is the top six. So the Hawks are then at 46. The Raptors are at 45.5. And then the Bulls are at 44. I've cut it off at those nine teams. I think it is fair to say the quality drops off. There are tiers within what we've already laid out here. I think the quality does drop off after the Bulls. I think that is where we get into the Knicks and these teams like the Pacers and whatnot that are tanking. I think below Chicago, things get worse. Yeah. David, this is I don't know like how to project some of this just because I think like some of it's going to depend on injuries, some of it's going to depend on luck. I think particularly the middle of this conference, so like 70, like the Heat, the Cavs, the Hawks, the Raptors. And then, you know, maybe the upper teams, depending on how they fare with injuries. I think these teams are just going to be beating the crap out of each other for positioning all year. And that is a very exciting place to look forward to.
I guess so. Miami, you know, had the advantage of being able to take a lot of teams, I think, by surprise last season. They got some unexpected production from P.J. Tucker. He fit in seamlessly. They were missing Bam Adebayo for large stretches there. Jimmy Butler missed some time. And yet somehow they wound up with the first seed in the Eastern Conference. So you never know what's going to happen from one year to the next, obviously. And that's what makes covering the league so much fun. You're absolutely right. You look at the teams. Look, even Boston and Milwaukee, who seemed like clear favorites, a Chris Middleton injury, and next thing you know, are the Bucks any better than that middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference? I don't think they are, even with a player as great as Giannis Antetokounmpo. So there's a lot to say for the parity in the Eastern Conference. I think it's fantastic. And yet very hard to predict exactly how it's going to pan out. As far as the win totals are concerned, I think Cleveland's a little low on that ranking. I think they'll wind up being a little bit higher than 46 wins. I think Miami's actually going to be a little bit lower. And I'm not just saying that it's a team that I happen to cover, but I just think they're going through some issues now because they did not make the kind of upgrades over the offseason that you talked about before. They were one of the teams that is standing pat, running it back, whatever you want to call it. And there's a glaring hole in that starting lineup, and they don't have anybody on the roster to fill it. So I'm a little surprised that bettors think that they'll be eking out 50 wins somehow. I know why that expectation is there, because Miami always seems to find a way to win. But the reality is that when you look at the strength of the Eastern Conference, you look at Philadelphia, you look at Atlanta making changes. I mean, even again, Boston, Milwaukee, Cleveland, so many teams improving, even the bottom of the pack there, like New York is a better team than they were last year. Orlando, Detroit, they've all improved. Indiana's going to be a little bit more stable than they were last year. And there's still a decent roster there. They could be a play-in tournament team, or they could be at the bottom of the conference. Who knows what happens if they wind up trading Miles Turner and Buddy Hield or something like that. But right now, you look at those 15 teams, there's a pretty stable core there, and yet at the same time, there's some teams that could wind up creeping in. Did anybody predict Cleveland would be as good as they were for most of the regular season last year? I don't think anybody really did. And yet they were a surprisingly strong team that's just gotten better this season.
Yeah, I think if I'm looking at this, I think I currently would have Boston and the Celtics, or excuse me, Boston and the Bucks, because Boston and Celtics are the same team. I think they're in their own tier. I think if I'm looking at teams based on what they've done and the level of play we've seen their best players play, and obviously, as you, I think you correctly mentioned, like a Chris Middleton injury took away so much from the Bucks last year. If Jaylen Brown turns his ankle in the playoffs next year, right, Boston's just not going to be the same. But those two teams, if they're healthy, provided luck and everything, I think those two teams are clearly like the two title contenders in the East. I think right now, I actually think, for me, Milwaukee is the team I think might be the best team in the league coming into the year. I feel Giannis is just incredible. Like I the Bucks are, I'm just like, yeah, like they might steamroll some people this year. You get below that, I look at like Philly, and I'm just, there's just a little bit of hesitation there for me, just because we'll see where that kind of goes. I don't think anyone can tell you what to expect from the Nets. I just don't think it's possible to actually prognosticate. What are the Heat? Well, I think we'll get into them more. I think if I'm guessing right now, I think I would pick Fever for the Cavs, and I think top four is like kind of realistic for them, because this is the guest podcast. For me, I think top four is realistic, but it's so dependent in a way maybe some of these other teams are not, based on things ascending very quickly, right? Like Donovan Mitchell has to hit the ground running. Evan Mobley, who might be the best player in this team in like 2 years, has to, I think, take a step forward this year as well, even if the pressure is now a little bit turned down. So there's some stylistic changes, I think, that are coming just by virtue of some of the personnel coming in and out, right? So maybe it's just because there's some unknown and some youth with Cleveland. And maybe like the Heat have, like we've seen Jimmy Butler do this. We've seen Kyle Lowry do this. We've seen Eric Spoelstra be the best coach in the league. And like the Cavs maybe don't have the track record, if we're looking at the teams above them in the win total, to maybe go into the season and say, okay, they can punch up against some of these very good teams.
Yeah, a whole hell of a lot of X factors there. Like Philadelphia, I mean, there's no way of thinking that Joel Embiid's going to stay healthy for an 82-game season, right? That's never happened and never will. He's going to miss time, and we've seen what that team is like without him in the lineup, and it's not particularly good. And yes, the addition of, you know, Montrezl Harrell is fine. Obviously, they acquired P.J. Tucker, who can play center in some small lineups and things of that sort. So they have options now that they didn't have last year, and they're clearly all in it. But the question marks for this team when they enter the playoffs, and James Harden's ability to be as durable and as effective as he has been in years past during the regular season, I think, are still lingering. Brooklyn, to me, there might not be a bigger X factor in the Eastern Conference, right? Because they have a more talented group, I think, that almost any team in the Eastern Conference, for sure. Like, I mean, they've got three all-stars there, not to mention perhaps one of the top five players in the league in Kevin Durant. And yet, everybody's kind of expecting them to fall apart, but they made some nice moves on the fringes there that really strengthened that roster. And now, whether they all agree to buy in and they all find a way to coexist, who knows, right? So it's a really, really interesting case study next season's going to be, because so many teams have realistic opportunities there. I don't know that we could say that last season, and I don't know what to do moving forward either.
No, and I think, like, you know, there's obviously some teams that in theory are going to cycle out of the conversation of the best teams in the East as we go beyond this season. But like, you look at Cleveland and Atlanta, and I think the Raptors, and I think you would also say the Heat, just based on kind of their track record of always trying to compete. Like, none of these teams, I think, realistically in the next like 2 to 3 years even, are really trying to take a step back. Like, the Celtics, like, would obviously look at Tatum being 24, have a runway. The Giannis is 2 years left on his deal, but like, it's still very much in his prime. Like, you have all these teams that are very in the moment. Some teams more than others. I think certain teams are going to be more focused on winning the title this year than maybe some other teams. Maybe that gives teams like Cleveland or Atlanta an edge in the regular season. The play-in is maybe a wrinkle to consider in this as well. But this is, to me, just going to be like a highly competitive stretch. And I think, before we're going to break, David, that is just for me, as covering the league and thinking about it, who spends a lot of time looking at my wife and saying, I'm really sorry I'm watching this like Kings Pacers game right now, but like, I just want to watch, I watch some basketball. Like, that is a fun place for us to be, I think.
No, I agree 100%. A lot of good points there. It's a lot of fun. So many different personalities, a lot more parity. Interesting teams that could have breakouts. Like, I mean, again, even these bottom tier teams, like, they have the opportunity to be really, really fun on a night-to-night basis, and you never know when it's going to happen. And seeing these young players continue to develop, whether it's Paolo Banchero or Cade Cunningham or something like that, somebody's going to take a leap, and you never know where it comes from and when it's going to happen. We're going to see it play out over the course of next season. It's a lot of fun, man. This is it's a great season. It really is, and I'm really psyched up. And I'm not just saying that because we're a few days away from the start of training camp and media day, which is going to be a really fun opportunity for us too. Are you going to be able to cover media day live?
Yes, I will. I am missing we're recording actually at the same time that Donovan Mitchell presser is happening. I cannot go to that because of my day job, but I will, one of my days off of work every year is to go to media day. And last year that involved a lot of me wondering how Ricky Rubio's hair was just so perfect.
That's so fantastic.
I was just like, Ricky, it was like one of those moments where, like, I don't know if you get this with being when you see teams every year with the Cavs, I have at least one guy that I'm like, I don't understand. Like, it's weird to me that he's here. Like, Derrick Rose is probably the most famous one. It still didn't make sense to me to watch Derrick Rose like in a Cavs. It just felt weird. Yeah. Rubio in a Cavs uniform last year was just like, this is kind of weird. This is a little surprising. And yet he's back, and we're going to see Donovan Mitchell in a Cavs jersey, which in itself is like not something I would have guessed happening like 2 months ago. All right, after the break, we're going to get into some of the challenges the Cavs face in year one, because I wanted to talk to David about this and see what he thinks. But first, going to tell everyone about our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline.net is your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports this season. Find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts, including this year's, every single week. BetOnline is also your continued source for your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. It's also the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including Major League Baseball, MMA, boxing, golf, and soon the NBA. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. For instance, Evan Mobley is currently +1600 to win Defensive Player of the Year. The Cavs over-under, no chance. Okay, wow, said it here first, David Rubel. The Cavs over-under, meanwhile, is set at 46.5 after the Donovan Mitchell trade. BetOnline, where the game starts. I think, David, if I remember correctly, if you're looking at this, I think Bam Adebayo is only like +1300. So him and Evan Mobley within that same range for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, it's Bam's award to win. I'm calling it now. He was the Defensive Player of the Year last year. He just had that little injury, and a lot of people just saw the numbers of games he missed, and they took that into consideration. But there's no way in hell he's not a better defender than Marcus Smart, and I'll take that to my grave. I don't care.
I love, as someone who was on what I think Zach Lowe is called, the bandwagon. I am with you. I remember when he was like linked in some of the KD stuff, and I was just like, I understand the rule stuff, but I'm just like, the whole point of getting KD is him to play with Bam as much as it's him to play with Jimmy. That's a podcast I'm sure you guys did that people go listen to.
Okay. We had a couple episodes like that.
I'm sure you milked the Kevin Durant thing as long as you possibly could, as I'm now currently, and Evan and I are milking the Donovan Mitchell thing. So, David, I look at this Cavs team, and I think there are a couple things that stand out. As far as challenges goes, well, I'm sure you have some of the same, but when I ask you, like, what are the things you're kind of looking to see how this works, year one of Mitchell, the changes in the roster, like, what are you kind of looking at as challenges for this Cavs team in navigating this Eastern Conference in year one of the Mitchell era?
Well, just finding a way to coexist, right? Like, Mitchell, not a bad locker room presence, despite the reputation, and I know some Jazz fans that are kind of just, like, happy to see him leave and everything else like that, but he was appreciated and loved there. And from what I'd always seen, yeah, look, I mean, he's a ball hawk. He's ineffective and efficient at times. Obviously, he's going to take shots that he probably shouldn't. That's going to wear on some players, especially guys that are, up and coming. Like we're all kind of counting on Garland and Mobley to take these leaps. But things are going to be different next year than they were. It's not going to be as egalitarian an offense. It's going to be, well, let Donovan go to work. And you're going to have a lot of possessions where you're going to see him go to work and go, one for three and things of that sort, like, shooting 33 to 40%, maybe if you're lucky. So those are concerns for me is how is he going to be able to kind of go into that locker room and say, all right, I'm glad you guys are here. Now give me the damn ball and watch me go to work for better or for worse. Because, that's occasionally what we saw from him in Utah. And yeah, they won a lot, But we know that there were problems in that locker room with Rudy and things of that sort. And you wonder how those might translate into the Cleveland locker room and whether or not there's the stability and the infrastructure in place. And look, I mean, I say this, and I know a lot of people want to joke about the marketing aspect of Heat culture and everything else like that. Screw the hashtag and everything else. But the reality is that they've been a very stable franchise since Pat Riley joined in 1995. I mean, there are members of that organization that have been there since he came on board with the team in 95 and are still there, you know, 27 years later. And that's what Heat culture is all about, an accountability, a stability, an open level of communication. When Mitchell takes these shots that he shouldn't, how's Darius going to respond as a young all-star looking to carve out his name and his own reputation? Like, what's going to happen with Evan when he sees, you know, when Mitchell looks him off and he's wide open down low or something like that? You know, how is Kevin Love, as I would assume the veteran voice in that locker room, going to be able to talk to somebody he doesn't particularly know all that well and say, look, you've got to, this is how it works, this is how you kind of have to fit in, et cetera. And then how is JB Bickerstaff going to be able to manage all these personalities? Because that, to me, is a huge challenge. Not just in the playoffs, which that's a whole other animal because everything becomes much more magnified and scrutinized, but during the regular season, when you're traveling on a six-game road trip and you're like, you know, maybe you've lost five games in a row, how do you bounce back from that? How does he carry that team as a locker room leader, et cetera? And that could apply to Bickerstaff, Love, and certainly it's going to apply to their best player now in Donovan Mitchell.
I think how Bicker, this is something you actually, when this trade happened and you texted and were like, the JB part of this, I think, is going to be fascinating because this is a very different job now than what he had last year. The right. job that he took when he took for John Boeheim was to reset, was get the ship going in the right direction, to get things functioning in a way that wasn't like incoherent and sort of listless. Then they obviously get Evan Mobley. Darius Garland takes a big, big step. And all this stuff sort of ascends itself. And right. now there's like, and now you get Donovan Mitchell and you traded these picks. There are expectations in just a different way. And they gave him this big contract extension last year. So I don't think he's necessarily like under fire in the short term or anything like that. I would say the same for Altman, considering he also got a contract extension. And but that at least maybe means something for their sense. But like, this is a group that like Donovan Mitchell has, aside from Kevin Love, like the most playoff experience of anyone on this team. Like that is where this group is kind of at. Like they've made the play-in last year, but Evan Mobley obviously has not been through the playoffs and had a heartbreaking loss. Yeah, Darius Garland has not had that. Like Ricky Rubio, for as long as he's been around, for as beloved as he is, hasn't had that. Jared Allen's peak was those Kenny Atkinson and Nets teams. This is a group that like is going to, I think, like there are basketball nerdy things we can get into that maybe I'm sure we'll talk about on the show and we'll see throughout the year. I almost think, David, the biggest thing for me is just how do they grow up in real time? How do they handle the bumps of going into whatever this can be in year one? Because I think that's a lot. That is not something I think we can assume is just going to be seamless. I think assuming it's seamless is probably a faulty way to look at this.
No, for sure. The expectations are different, like the personalities, everything. It's just, I mean, X's and O's certainly is going to be a challenge to overcome. But at the same time, it's just all these personalities kind of building up now. And interesting that you mentioned Allen and the Brooklyn Nets years, but that's another team that kind of blew it up when their vibes were going strong. They made the playoffs that year with D'Angelo Russell, and then all of a sudden they just changed course, right? They go for the superstar route. Do you see something similar happening with the acquisition of Donovan Mitchell? Could it potentially backfire on this group to now raise a level of expectations, to kind of sacrifice some of those good vibes and the positive growth from last year and the realistic acquisition of a superstar that raises your ceiling but could, you know, damage your chemistry somewhat? Like, I mean, that's a legitimate question I have for you. Like, are you concerned about things backfiring to that degree because of the acquisition of Mitchell?
I think it will be really interesting to see how he has been publicly excited about this, and like I think seemingly excited to play with Garland in particular. It seems like those guys knew each other a little bit.
Sure.
I also think like it seemed like the Utah thing in particular was just like goofy all around in a way that I think you're hoping that was a situational thing more than it was like a guy being a malcontent kind of thing. And I think like it doesn't seem like that's I'm just kidding. I also just think like the business that the, if you're an NBA team, you're in.
Right.
I think this is just the thing you kind of have to do. Like, I think what is important is that you have locker room stuff, and you and winning will cure stuff, and coaches and things that can kind of help you navigate some of this, right? Like, you maybe know this better than anyone. I'm sure the Miami Heat have like a very feisty locker room. I'm sure the Miami Heat have like a competitive group.
We saw it blow up on the sideline last year. Yeah.
you brought. I was not gonna necessarily like put a pin on that directly, but yeah, like we saw Udonis Haslem literally have to call it Jimmy Butler, and like you. As much like that stuff does matter, and I think what the Cavs are sort of hoping is that like maybe Garland grows into that leader. I think having Kevin Love around is a big deal in that sense. I think Bickerstaff being kind of a coach that seems to really go out of his way to sell himself to players, and then there also are some assistants in the Cavs organization and guys that already know Donovan. So Ricky knows him. Howell Nato, I believe, played with him in Utah. There's some, and again, a couple of assistants. So like there is some connective tissue here that is like interesting to me in that sense, but it's certainly a risk. But I think you have to do this, right? Like, I understand the picks are a lot. I understand like you don't have a ton of like, if this goes wrong, you're going to be in a tricky position, because that's just what giving up this amount of picks means. Atlanta will have the same kind of issue. I just kind of think that if you're going to be in the NBA and you're going to try to contend and maximize what you have, these are the kind of risks you have to take. I mean, like the Nets, like literally, you mentioned, they went away from the maybe the best vibes of like a 6-seed team that we had seen, just a really fun group in the way it connects, and blew it all up to chase the title with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And I bet you if you asked them today, they probably would do it again, just because like that's the nature of the business we're in.
Yeah. No, good point. I agree 100%.
I will be fascinated to see just how the Mitchell Garland dynamic, like the Mobley thing, I don't know of enough about. Like Mobley is just like a blank slate to me based on how little he has talked in things. The Garland Mitchell dynamic and how that evolves over time to me will be really interesting. Because Garland played so much of the ball on his hands last year. Mitchell played a ton of the ball on his hands in Utah. What the give and take with them is long term is going to be really fascinating to me.
No, without a doubt. But the only reason I bring up the Mobley thing is because, like, he's like firmly in that window of a player who's trying to prove himself, right? You know, like not winning Rookie of the Year, all these expectations heaped on him as far as being the future of the franchise to some degree, or at least being part of the future of the franchise. And now all of a sudden, well, you kind of take a back seat. Like, you know, you don't get to this level without a healthy amount of ego. And now he's going to have to sacrifice some of that in order to, you know, allow Donovan Mitchell to be who he is, for him to thrive. And his game's going to take a step back. Like, it's just the reality. So when you have on-court production being impacted negatively, and then you have egos to manage and everything else like that, and then, you know, it's like, oh, you know, he has to look at it, well, am I going to get my second contract? Am I going to get paid the money that I think I deserve now that Mitchell's on this roster? That could cause chaos.
Yeah. How that is, I think, interesting to put a pin in and think about it as we go forward. All right, after the break, one last discussion about Donovan, about Cavs post Donovan Mitchell with David Ramil. We'll be right back after this. Last segment with David Ramil. Check him out on Locked On Heat with Wes Goldberg. Just have to listen to this Locked On Cavs episode. David, you said it. I tend to agree. I think top four for the Cavs, exceeding that win total set by Vegas, is interesting. I'm gonna describe the Cavs in the same tier as Atlanta by saying they are a team that is going for growth after a big move. Those are the two teams that are saying we made a big move. It is time to ascend out of the plane into something more. Is that a fair slotting? These teams are obviously different, but is that a fair slotting of where the Cavs are at in your mind?
Absolutely, I agree 100%. I think I have bigger questions about Atlanta and their acquisition of DeJounte Murray, but I'll go on Locked On Hawks for that discussion. I'm not as sold. Like, people are talking about them like it's a shoe-in. Oh, you don't acquire an all-star and just say, oh, well, there you go, you're just a much better team. Like, there has to be fit and everything else. And I've been a big fan of Donovan Mitchell. I texted you that one after the trade took place. I love the move. I think Cleveland's going to be a better regular season team than they will be in the playoffs. And I think when it comes to the overall rankings and win-loss total projections and things of that sort, that's where I see Cleveland being a top-four team, because I think a team like Miami not necessarily as invested in the regular season and looking more to make an impact in the playoffs. But yeah, I agree with your ranking there as far as making a big move and looking to see where they are and taking a significant upgrade from where they were last year.
There, I want to bounce around the East a little bit. Is there a team you're particularly confused by? Besides, you kind of hit on Atlanta, but is there another team here where you're a little worried or confused? I have two. One we've kind of hit on, and one we haven't.
Yeah, I mean Brooklyn certainly, right? I mean
that is one of them. That is one of them.
That's the big X factor. Chicago is also interesting.
That's the other one for me.
Okay, yeah, because I mean the Lonzo Ball injury, it hurts obviously, and then you acquire Goran Dragic. What version of Goran are you going to get on a night-to-night basis? He's no longer a nightly performer the way he was even, you know, 2 seasons ago to Miami. And even that was questionable at that point in time. And he's obviously put a lot of miles now playing with the Slovenian national team. You know, is he going to continue to be impactful? I don't think he can carry that team. Is Caruso going to be healthy? It seems like he is. You know, there's questions there. I don't think DeRozan's going to have nearly an MVP type season there either. So like there's concerns about how good Chicago can be. And I've seen them all over in terms of people already projecting them to be out of the play-in, you know, or maybe even a top six team. It's like they're all over the map. And that's part of the fun of this Eastern Conference is you don't know exactly how to accurately predict it. And it's just a matter of like, well, we'll see what happens as these teams continue to develop. But yeah, that's a big question for me. And again, Brooklyn, like a lot of talent, great, you know, fringe moves there. I'm a big Royce O'Neal fan. I think he's a good fit there. They get more depth. You know, it's just a really, Joe Harris is going to be back. I mean, they seem on paper like a team that has everything. And yet, what's going to happen? Like, that's a powder keg waiting to explode. How are they going to be able to get back on track with Steve Nash as their head coach after publicly calling for his firing to some degree, like at least through back channels and Shams Charania? Like that's a huge question for me. It's like I couldn't imagine like going into a workplace after I said, yeah, I hope my boss gets fired, and then being like, oh, come back on Monday like it never happened, you know?
Right.
Like, that should be a lot of fun to see how it carries over. But, you know, you can't discount the talent level of that team either with Durant, Irving, and Simmons. I think they're going to be a strong group. So that's, I think them and the Cavs kind of round out my top four. I would have Philadelphia as fifth overall with Miami probably closer to sixth.
So how you, the team you cover, this is, I've gotten a little ahead of myself, I'll admit, and started like thinking about, okay, what are like the playoff matchups that would be most juicy about what we think about these teams? Miami is very high in the list of teams I would like to see the Cavs in a playoff series against, just because I think the coaching aspects of it, I think the way that like Miami would throw stuff at the Cavs would be fat. Like I just kind of want to see that. Philly is also there just because I think it could get really weird. Like, I think that series could get bizarrely weird and you know, Harden, maybe like Harden and Maxey, and who can get attacked more between Garland, Mitchell, and Maxey, and the Embiid, Allen, and Mobley part of it. Like, I think that series could just be weird. But the Heat one would just be like, okay, how do the Cavs do against this group that is just churns out wins and does Heat hashtag Heat culture things and has Bam and like so when you to end here, what are you thinking about the team you cover?
It's tough to say exactly because you know, like you said, you can't ever discount this team. They just seem to find a way to always win more than 40 games a season. It's just whether or not they're going to get closer to 50 wins like they did last year, or they're going to be somewhere towards the bottom of that, but they're going to be somewhere in that group, right? And they're going to find a way to win. I like their chances in the playoffs for the most part. I mean, unless they're taking on a superior team like the Milwaukee Bucks, I think I like their chances against anybody. They played the Celtics very, very tightly last year. And you can talk about the injuries on Boston's side of things, but Miami was going through their own injuries as well. The idea of running it back is an interesting one because they lost P.J. Tucker. They were clearly involved in the trade for Donovan Mitchell and or Kevin Durant, and they swung and missed on both counts. So now you have no choice but to run it back. And that's where the internal development kind of comes into place here. Like, I think we're going to see a better, stronger version of Kyle Lowry, and I think he's going to find his footing here. And hopefully, it's not to say that the personal issues that impacted him last year are gone, but I think we're going to see him healthier on the court more and having more of a lasting impact during the regular season. And yet you still need more from Tyler Herro. You still need more from Bam Adebayo. They need to be able to take a leap. Like, you don't have any question marks about Jimmy, although you wonder if at age 33, and today he celebrates his 33rd birthday, how much longer can he hold off from letting aging impact his game and his ability to, you know, change the course of a game on a nightly basis. So those are legitimate questions there, but you need to see growth from some of their young players there. You need to see what you get out of Max Strus or Caleb Martin or whoever winds up starting in that lineup. And then you've got perhaps the biggest X factor of all. Is Victor Oladipo going to return back to all-star strength? And from everything we've heard during the offseason, he's put into work. It's a full offseason for him, like actual work being done. And his trainer says that he's looked as good as he ever has. And we're talking about an all-star level player. And if you're going to get that, then you have concerns about whether or not you have to start him. I don't think he's going to start. I think he's going to come off the bench. I think he's going to be the sixth man of the year. I think he's going to be, you know, back to being the defensive stalwart he was and being able to lead that second unit and being able to carry the team. So there's a lot of questions about the Heat team. But at the same time, you kind of write those off because, you know, Eric Spoelstra, and he just finds a way to get the most out of his group. They're not going to be out of the playoffs. It's just how far they can go once they actually make the postseason.
David, I'll ask you this last question and let you go.
All right.
Fill in the blank. 2 years from now, the best player in the Cleveland Cavaliers is who?
Donovan Mitchell.
In 2 years? In 2 years, Donovan Mitchell is still the best player in the Cleveland Cavaliers?
Yeah.
He's under contract, right? You are the first person that hasn't... And granted, I haven't asked like a ton of people this. I think it's probably Evan Mobley. You're the first person that has given me the Donovan Mitchell answer when I've asked this, both on podcasts and like... asking people this.
Yeah, I will go so far as to say that I've after a long time covering Miami and even longer time being a fan of the team before I started, you know, my journey in NBA media, I have always come to disregard like draft picks, the value of draft picks, because that's just what Miami does and that's what Pat Riley does. And young players are a fantastic mystery box that everybody seems to love. I couldn't care less. Like, I think he's a great player. I think he's a lot of fun, got a lot of potential. But I have no idea, and neither do your listeners and or viewers have any idea what he's going to be like in 2 years. And for you to say that he's going to be better than a 30 points per game all-star, multi-time all-star in his prime, frankly, is ludicrous. Like, I don't see how he's going to take that leap when you've already got that all-star on the roster, not to mention that Darius Garland kid. So, like, there's a lot of questions there. I don't see how all of a sudden Mobley's just going to be like, you know what? I'm top dog. To hell with your Donovan Mitchell trade. That's ridiculous.
This is the energy I needed in my life, David. I need you to be like, Chris, don't eat that. Don't order that second scoop of ice cream, my guy. Chill out. You don't need it. I kind of think that's like a very refreshing way to look at that question. Cause like he is a mystery box to some degree. And like, it's 1 year and like, I'm obviously just said what I said, but
right.
It's 1 year. Donovan Mitchell's done some stuff. I mean, you can go on YouTube and find some insane Donovan Mitchell scoring performances that are above anything that anyone in the Cavs has done to date. So I think that's a reasonable answer.
Thank you.
The question is, how do they stagger the contracts and keep all four together? We'll see as that goes along. All right, check out David Ramil on Locked On Heat with Wes Goldberg. Find that wherever you're listening or watching Locked On Cavs right now. We'll be back on Monday. We're going to dive into some preseason preview stuff. We're going to specifically be doing a roundtable and or 10 questions that will get answered in training camp. I hope you join us for that. Thanks again to Jake Stevens for producing. We'll be back again on Monday. Be well, everybody.